He ran over a motorcyclist and shot at troopers, but now he's been found not capable to stand trial. Joe Biden is giving away more money on his way out the door. Surprise, surprise. How is this happening? And who is Sarah Lawn anyway? And what will this new facility in western North Dakota give the state that it doesn't have now? Those stories and more coming up today on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Good to have you with me, my friend. Thank you for being here on this Friday afternoon, the last Friday of December. When we meet again on Monday, we will be in the final couple days of 2024, getting ready to turn the page to 2025. That means Frisco is on the way and cold weather is on the way, too. Dean talked about it a little bit yesterday, but he's put out some more detail on this. I don't like any part of what I'm seeing here, although I guess this is the part of the world we live in, and we get one of these weeks once or twice a winter. And it looks like we're going to get one here coming up just after the first of the year. Below zero temps will be par for the course for a few days here in the greater Northwest. Steve Hallstrom Studios, built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, the Precision Concrete Cutters, Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it and go to PCCND.com to learn more. Did I say Great Northwest a minute ago? That's great. The Great Midwest is what I meant to say there. The Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line is open for business today as well. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast, now offering counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in soon at valleychristian.co. Lots of things to do here on the show today. Before we wrap it up, I'll give you my prediction for Vikings-Packers Part 2. They played once already this year. Vikings built a big early lead earlier this year in Green Bay and hung on at the end. What will this game be like? This is a very interesting one because the odds makers can't seem to figure this out. They've kind of flip-flopped back and forth all week trying to decide who should be the favorite here. So that means it ought to be a pretty darn good game. Also have some detail on foreclosures in Minnesota. They are on the rise. How much worse has it gotten in the last year? So we'll talk about that on the program. Paul Fisher from Capstone Classical Academy will be with us at 5:35 today. They're putting the finishing touches on their new facility in South Fargo. It looks wonderful from the street, and they're about ready to move in. So the last day of school in the old building is done, and when they get together again in January, they'll be in that beautiful new building, and Paul will walk us through that, I guess, verbally, if not visually, coming up today here on the program. We're also going to be joined by Jeff Simon, Executive Director of the Western Dakota Energy Association. We're going to talk about this new Cerelon plant near Trenton, North Dakota, and how it's different from anything else the state has already. So lots of ground to cover here on the program, a few other little things as well. As I mentioned, give us a call at 271-1100 if you'd like to get involved in the conversation today. You can email us as well, 701-271-1100. The phone number, sorry, email is studio@flagfamily.com. The text line is 701-237-1590. Kevin Flynn and I had an interesting chat. I want to hit on this just for a minute. Earlier today, Kevin filling in for Scott in the What's On Your Mind program, we were talking about what the deportation effort might look like. And I'm sure that I am oversimplifying things, which is not normally my strength. I'm really good at taking simple things and making them complicated. But there's a lot of people that are saying that there's no way we'll ever be able to pull off this deportation thing. And I say to myself, okay, I get it. It's going to be a little complicated. It won't necessarily be easy to do. But as far as coming up with a plan on how to do it, I don't think this is rocket science. And I think I might try to get into this maybe on Monday, since I won't have time to do this today with all the things that we have scheduled already. But I don't feel like this is splitting the atom to come with a plan on how to deport people who are here illegally. So I think this needs some conversation, because I don't want us to be scared by the possibility and how quote unquote complicated it might be. I'm predicting already that Congress is going to have no appetite for this whatsoever. I don't care what they said during their campaigns. I don't care what they said going into Donald Trump taking office. I just believe that Congress, as soon as it starts getting tough, people are going to say, whoa, 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 hang on. We're being really mean to people here, and I don't know. they might not like us. We might not get reelected if we do this. So I hope I'm wrong, but I really don't think Congress has the appetite to do this at all, and may try to stand in the way. So that is a conversation we need to do at some point here along the way. But right now it's time for the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines, going rapid fire to catch you up on what has been a busy day. We start with the weather almanac for today, December 27th. Average high is 20, average low is 4. Record high 46 degrees in 1928, record low minus 34 in 1883. Sunrise this morning was at 8:11, sunset at 4:45. At one time, about a week and a half ago, it was at 4:38, so we're gaining a little bit. We're gaining about 30 seconds of daylight today. So that makes it feel a little bit better. CNBC gives us the wrap on trading today. Light trading today on a holiday week, but the Dow was down 333 points. S&P 500 down 66, and NASDAQ down 298. WTI crude oil today up about 70 cents at $70.26. Gold today down $17.40 an ounce, and silver was down 41 cents. Bitcoin today down about $1,500 at $94,211. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.03. That's down a penny from yesterday. Average price in North Dakota, $2.80. Minnesota, $2.85. South Dakota, $2.77. Diesel today, $3.50 a gallon. In the news today, WDAY Radio reports that a man accused of running over a motorcyclist in Fargo and then shooting at a state trooper in July of 2022 has been found not guilty of attempted murder and 11 other charges. A Cass County judge has ruled that Michael Yusa was not guilty due to a lack of mental capacity. After allegedly running over a motorcyclist, police say Yusa fired more than 30 shots from his apartment. Also accused of exchanging gunfire with law enforcement. He's been committed to the state hospital. It will be determined in February how long he will spend there. So he's not being released back into the public, but he's not being found guilty because they say he did not have the mental ability to understand what he was doing. More details are out today in the, what do we want to call this? The traffic accident that killed the Walmart worker down on 52nd Street, a 23-year-old Alex Cruz, as we told you yesterday, has had his license suspended and accrued about five different moving violations there. He's been booked into the Cass County Jail on charges that that he made his first court appearance on yesterday. And the charges now are basically from the incident where he ran over a woman and said that his windshield tint was too dark and he thought he might have potentially hit a deer. So he faces up to 10 years in prison. We learned that today as well. And his bail has been set at $50,000. They don't believe that he is going to be a flight risk on this one here. I'm looking in the story because I wanted to tell you what the charges were that he was accused of, but the story that I'm reading right now doesn't have those. I think it's a vehicular homicide charge. Anyway, he could face 10 years in jail for that. Bismarck Tribune says a Fargo man has been arrested, reached speeds of more than 110 miles an hour going from South Dakota into North Dakota on I-29 earlier today. 40-year-old Gregory Richards, we don't know the exact motive why he was driving that fast because but we do happen to know that he is facing charges of driving under suspension, reckless endangerment, and driving under the influence of drugs, in addition to felony fleeing. He pleaded not guilty to the misdemeanor charges of DUI, driving under suspension, and reckless endangerment. But something about his driving caused him to be pursued, and all heck apparently broke loose at that point. Another business is closing downtown Fargo, maybe two. We don't know why, however. Vinyl Giant and Game Giant, two businesses that are owned by the same ownership group, are going to close in February, according to a Facebook post from the owner. I'm reading from the Valley News Live report. However, the Facebook account for the owners, that particular post has been disabled. So whatever it is that they have posted, for some reason, they wanted to withdraw that post. We don't know why. I am waiting for somebody to say I'm leaving downtown Fargo because of issues with crime or homeless or whatever, but nobody is willing to say that Lee is downtown Fargo. There have been, what, 10, 12 businesses this year already, but I keep saying that there's not going to be any changes until people believe that these things are problems that are affecting businesses downtown, but nobody is willing to say those things. But two more businesses saying we're closing from downtown Fargo. Now, I don't know that that's the reason, right? I'm just saying that you always wonder with downtown. They just say business challenges. So we don't know that anything regarding downtown has anything to do with that. Forum has a story today on the beginning of the new Minnesota legislative session and the effort being resurrected once again to legalize sports betting in 2025 in Minnesota. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle seem interested in trying to make this happen. The Forum story, I think, gives some interesting notes here about gambling and people in Minnesota. There was a 2020 survey by the Minnesota Department of Human Services that said 1.3% of adults in Minnesota are problem gamblers. That's about 56,000 adults. And an additional 3.8%, nearly 162,000 adults, are at-risk gamblers. And another 22% of people have been negatively impacted by the addiction of a loved one or someone they know. And so this has people, you're rightfully asking, is this the right thing to do? So that discussion firing up again in St. Paul as they're getting ready to start the new session after the first of the year. Star Tribune reports that a ninth U.S. telecom firm has been confirmed to have been hacked as part of a sprawling Chinese espionage campaign. The campaign gave officials in Beijing access to private texts and phone conversations of an unknown number of Americans. This according to a top White House official who made these comments on Friday. The Biden administration officials say at least eight other telecom companies, as well as dozens of other nations, have been affected by the Chinese hacking blitz known as Salt Typhoon. This is something that Donald Trump will need to get tough on as he takes office. And CNBC reports that credit card debt has hit another record high in our country, $1.17 trillion. And that means the credit card balances were already 8.1% higher than a year ago. And 28% of credit card users had not paid off the gifts they bought last year on their credit card. We had a story yesterday saying that about 36%, if I remember right, of Americans said they had to go into debt to buy their Christmas presents this year. So all of those numbers will likely continue to go up. This is one of those underlying stories beneath the surface of the whole economy that is there and is affecting things will continue to continue to get worse for some people. So the story of this economy cannot be told without including the discussion on the debt level that our citizens are under or putting themselves through, however you want to look at it. And those, friends, are some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. It is 4:20 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we return, Dean wasn't kidding yesterday about the cold temps in January. The forecasts are starting to file in and they don't look good. Talk about it next. Labor Masters is Fargo Moorhead West Fargo's number one choice for daily and temp labor. They like to say over there that no job is too big and no project is too small for their staffing solutions. The team at Labor Masters has a lot of experience and they know just about everybody in town. They work with more than 200 businesses in the FM area. They provide a wide range of daily and temporary employment positions. We've used them like many other companies have as well. They've been fantastic. And you don't have to be a business to use these services. If you're a homeowner, got a lake place, got a farm, you just need a hand for a day or two getting some work done, moving, painting, hauling dirt, all those kinds of things, they can help you out at Labor Masters. Moving snow, they can probably do that too. Give them a call, put them to the test. They love a challenge. Labormasters.net. Or you can call them 701-566-8755. That's 701-566-8755. All right, so Dean was on the program yesterday talking about the reset of the LRC cycle. And this is something we all kind of wait for, because once they sort of get all their bearings and they can start making some predictions, start running their models, they can give us a pretty good idea what the weather's going to look like even weeks out. And Dean said one of the things we're seeing right now is right around the time that NDSU plays Montana State down in Frisco, Texas, it's going to get really cold here. And I saw Dean's forecast today on WDAY's and the Flag's website. It only goes out 7 days. That's about how far out they feel like forecasting with certainty on specifics. So I started looking at some other long-range forecasts out there on the web. Now, I know that these are, you know, take them with a grain of salt, but if you put them all together, you sort of get an idea maybe what things are looking at. So I found one, Weather Underground, goes out 10 days, and they are saying that by the time you get to Sunday, January 5th, it's going to be below zero, but a high of 7. So there will be some hours below zero. That's about as far out as that one went. Another 10-day forecast went out to Sunday the 5th and said 17 for the high and zero for the low. So cool, but that's pretty average temperatures for January. Weather Channel goes out as far as Friday the 10th. So they go a total of 14 days out in their forecast. And they have, starting Sunday, January 5th, there is we'll spend some time for almost a whole week where we'll be below zero, at least for part of the day. Now, they do show that we'll climb above zero by a couple of degrees the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, so that weekend after the national championship football game. We can take that. Usually we get a week during the winter where we don't get above zero, even, you know, for a minute. So that doesn't sound that bad. And then one other forecast I found, which was on a company called, where were you? I just had it here. Anyway, one of those online forecasting weather places, they kind of go with that route of being in the low teens, so not completely under zero. Now, if the Weather Channel's forecast is right and we're below zero for a good share of the week, that's certainly going to be winter. But I'm not seeing a whole lot, and Dean talked about it, maybe a little snow here and there along the way, but certainly no storms. I don't see that on any of these forecasts here, where we would have significant chance of precipitation. It's all pretty mild, a couple of 25% chances. But that starts to feel more like a little dusting than anything else. So Dean has got a nice write-up today on the website about the kind of Arctic blast that is coming, which got me thinking about this here. Dean does say, though, that if you're thinking about going down to Frisco for the Bison game, probably looking at temps in the upper 40s to low 50s, which is a little below average down there, but I've been down there many a year when it's been about that. And Dean says still some question marks on how much snow arrives right before the Arctic air. Stay tuned on that. So possibly a storm around the 5th or the 6th, and then it's going to get cold. That happens a lot. We get some snow, and then it gets really cold, and so all that snow you get, it just kind of freezes. And you can't get rid of it because nothing is thawing out. So we might get just a little bit of that as well. So I thought that was interesting based on the conversation that we had with Dean yesterday. I wanted to pass that along to you. All right, coming up on 4:30, which means it is time for a check of news and weather. And then after that, we've got one of our guests on the program ready for the conversation, Jeff Simon, the executive director of the Western Dakota Energy Association. We talked a little bit about this Cerulean facility out near Trenton, North Dakota. What does it mean to North Dakota, and what does it give the state that it doesn't have now? We'll talk about that with Jeff as we continue here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you own a business or a venue, a building, something like that, you might not have thought about this, but you could have an ATM on site, and you could make money by doing it. Card Care Systems is your best choice if you want to go that route. You just provide the location, and Card Care Systems handles the rest. You get a share of the ATM fees, and lower credit card processing fees means more money in your pocket. They also sell and service ATMs for area businesses as well. They're grateful for the chance to serve their outstanding customers over the last 28 years, and no one provides better ATM customer service than Card Care Systems. Give them a call. See if you qualify for their free 90-day placement program and start improving your bottom line today. Go to getmyatm.com. That's getmyatm.com. Simple and easy. Can you remember that? Or call 701-235-3090. 701-235-3090. Give them a call. Check that out. Ask some questions. That doesn't cost anything, and you might be able to put a little money in your pocket. I see that Stephen Moore, who's one of my favorite voices, I think a guy with a ton of wisdom when it comes to our economy and how money works in this country, put out a social media post yesterday talking about the jobs market in our country. And as you have been told a million times on this show, we keep seeing all these headline numbers with the announcers or reporters talking about how great these job numbers are, and there's jobs being created, and the Biden economy is doing so good for so many people. And we have taken some time over these last couple of years together to dig in and find out that the numbers aren't quite what they seem, and they're almost always revised downward. Well, Steve Moore says this on his Facebook post from yesterday. He says, another 500,000 jobs reported under Joe Biden have turned out to be phantom. The Philly Federal Reserve's recent findings reveal that quarter two job growth was actually negative, with all reported gains set for revision next year. This follows an alarming downward revision of 800,000 jobs from last year. Stay tuned, he says, for January's non-farm payrolls. More adjustments on the way. Another guy I like to follow is E.J. Antoni. He's a Ph.D. And an economic voice and mind that you hear often on Fox Business. Where I see him quite a bit there, and he's very active on social media as well. And he said something similar to that. He said the massive downward revisions to jobs data are set to continue. The latest from the Philadelphia Fed has early benchmarking indicating that jobs actually declined in the second quarter of this year. Now, the monthly job reports estimated gains of 653,000 in the second quarter. So apparently we're getting indications that there actually were no jobs created. In fact, we went the other direction. And so the whole thing seems to be a house of cards there. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Of course, all this happened in an election year. And of course, they say, well, you know, we're just getting new data, new information. I don't know. You can't be this wrong this often on things that could make people think one way or another about the election and have us not believe that this is some sort of intentional deceit, some sort of dishonesty. That's about all that I can say about that. So thought that was interesting and disappointing to see things like this, right? I mean, whatever the truth is, just give us the truth and let us deal with it. We understand that things aren't always going to go in a straight line upward, but just tell us. And when you tell us that, you know, the economy is great because there's all these jobs being created, but they're all part-time jobs or government jobs, none of them are going to Americans, then we start to ask some questions, but I guess they didn't want this. And I, again, for the 1,000,000th time, will say to you, I don't know how this election could have been this close. I get it. There's probably 20% of people that just, they're not going to listen to reason. They're just going to vote for the person that they feel like they're supposed to vote for. But I feel like there's 60, 70, 75 maybe percent of the people who will take a look at the information and just say, you know what, no matter what side of the tracks I come from or if I'm supposed to vote for the Sharks or the Jets, whoever that might be, if it doesn't make any sense, I'm going to change my vote. And so that being said, I'm really surprised that we got as close of an election as we did. So we'll continue to see how that all plays out. But I thought some of those notes from Steve Moore and E.J. Antoni were very interesting. All right, we want to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line a gentleman who I've visited with a couple of times along the way, but it's been a while. Thankful to have him on the show today. Jeff Simon is the executive director of the Western Dakota Energy Association. Jeff, good afternoon to you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today.
Well, Yeah, good afternoon, Steve. Good to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for weighing in on this one. So I don't expect you to have the blueprints for the Cerro Lawn facility in front of you or know exactly how it all comes together, but of anybody, I believe that you would be able to give us a very good perspective on what this whole project is going to mean to the state of North Dakota. And those of you who are just kind of new to this story who didn't hear me talking about it yesterday, Cerro Lawn is building a couple of facilities up in that Williston area that will be processing natural gas and turning it into a liquid. And so they are, Cerro Lawn just got their last permit a few days ago, and now they are basically cleared for takeoff on this thing. And so to talk a little bit about what this means to the state, I wanted Jeff to weigh in on this. I guess I'll just kind of let you go on that, Jeff. Overall, what do you think this means to North Dakota?
Well, you know, I'm not sure about this, but I would venture to say it's maybe the single largest investment in the state of North Dakota's history. Maybe we're talking about a $3 billion plant. My guess is that was, you know, that's bigger than Apple was in North Dakota even. You know, it's a huge project. We're looking at, you know, 1,000 jobs, construction jobs when it happens, like 100 permanent jobs, and, you know, just kinds of all kinds of, you know, additional wealth, I guess you would say, in North Dakota. It's really a great project, and I'm happy to see the permits have been issued. Just anxious to see construction get underway here soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, it says in the story that I'm reading here, I believe from the press release, that Cerro Lawn will, GTL North Dakota will be the first large-scale natural gas-fed facility in North America, $3.2 billion plant that will convert natural gas into more valuable industrial products like lubricants while also producing electricity. Is there another facility, Jeff? I guess I don't know the landscape well enough. Is there another facility in North Dakota that does what they do, or is this kind of a first-of-a-kind thing?
No, it would definitely be a first-of-a-kind, just as advertised, first-of-a-kind in North America, I think. I'm not sure if there's another one on the planet, but, you know, it's just a unique project. And the real beauty of it, Steve, is that it's going to use natural gas, and we've got, you know, an abundance of it. They're talking about at, you know, full scale up to, it's a two-phase project. They're going to build a plant, and then once operational, then they're going to start building a second plant. So, you know, we're talking overall a $6 billion investment, and, you know, at peak capacity, it would be using about 500 million cubic feet of natural gas a day, which would be huge for North Dakota. I mean, just to see, you know, a value-added project, you know, right now, you know, all the natural gas, we've got processing plants in the state, but it just goes in a pipeline and goes somewhere else. We don't turn it into anything more valuable, I guess, other than, you know, a few natural gas-fired power plants. You know, we convert it into electricity, but just, you know, just to see a value-added energy project in North Dakota, you know, it's exciting.
Yeah, I don't know what the impact to the state will be. I imagine the company has done some of those projections, and they're probably out there to be found. I was unable to find them on a search earlier today. But when you think about not only, like you said, Jeff, the jobs that are created there and the products that are going to be created and sold, you start thinking about the tax base as well and what this will mean in terms of if a company is profitable and or even just turns revenue here, that's a big addition to North Dakota's tax base as well. And we know right now that the industry provides about 55% of the taxes that are raised in the state come from the industry, and that's just got to mean more good things along those lines.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this a plant of this size is going to pay, you know, a hefty share of property taxes in Williams County. You know, that's kind of a benefit to everybody in a sense because it lowers everyone else's obligation. So, you know, there's that. But, you know, 100 employees, the income generated by that, you know, a modest amount of income tax generated from the company's profits. It's just great to see those, you know, like I say, a value-added energy project. We need more of them. And, you know, there are, you know, a number of them in the works through the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority, and North Dakota Development Foundation has funded some things. And, you know, I hope this is kind of a, you know, a first in line domino, and we see a whole bunch more of this.
Yeah, absolutely. With your work, Jeff, with the Western Dakota Energy Association, I've got to ask you, kind of stepping back big picture right now, I've got to think that while your organization is obviously a promoter of, you know, just different kinds of energy sources to continue to fuel our economy here, I've got to believe that having a new president and a new administration coming in here in January that has been saying, hey, full speed ahead on all of this has got to be great news for the people that you work with every day, correct?
Yeah, it's it was definitely a relief to see, you know, the end of the Biden-Harris administration, or it will be come January 20th. I mean, I think your listeners probably are aware, Steve. I mean, the Biden administration just launched an all-out war on coal, oil, natural gas, just American energy, really, at, you know, at the expense of subsidizing intermittent energy and you know, really kind of experimental energy in some of the things that they're talking about. So, yeah, it's definitely a positive thing. But, you know, a lot of work has to be done to undo the damage that, you know, Biden and his executive branch agencies have done on the regulatory front.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to untie all those, you know, tied up ends. No question about that. To, you know, get the lease sales going that we've been talking about. They're way behind on some of those, you know, lease auctions on public land and just all the regulation that you were talking about as well. So what is the attitude of the producers and the people you talk about? Do you hear people talking about, hey, you know, it feels like we got some wind at our back now. It's an opportunity to expand or grow what we do. What's kind of been the feeling among people that you've talked about what the future might look like over these next 4 years?
Well, you know, on the oil and gas front, there, you know, there hasn't been a big attitude shift there, I would say, but, you know, because most of the minerals in North Dakota, I mean, there are federal minerals, but most are, you know, private or state held. So there hasn't been, you know, all that much impingement on oil and gas. But there's a huge sigh of relief in the coal sector. I mean, the coal industry and the power plants, you know, looking at regulations that are frankly aimed at shutting down coal plants all over the country. And, you know, you've heard the warnings about grid reliability. The NERC has been sending out those warnings for 2 years now that if we keep shutting down these baseload plants, we're gonna start seeing blackouts, rolling blackouts. And you know what happens when that happens in the middle of winter in North Dakota?
Yes.
People can die. You know, it could be really bad. So that was a blessing, really.
Yeah, good stuff. Jeff, before I let you go, that's all I had as far as questions I wanted to ask. But any other thoughts that you want to leave with our audience here today about what's happening out in western North Dakota and the generation of all these energy sources and what's happening out there that you think maybe people might want to know about?
Well, you know, I don't want to end on a down note, I guess, but, you know, I should just mention, you know, there are some obstacles and there's going to be some growing pain with the Cirilon project. I mean, the traffic issues are a major concern of residents in the Trenton area, people who use Highway 1804 out there. But, you know, the company is working with North Dakota DOT and the township there, Williams County, to try to resolve those issues. And, you know, it's going to be a bee's nest once it gets going there. So that's why I believe the project isn't slated for construction to begin until 2026. They've got some other things to work out yet.
Yeah, a long way to go on that. And certainly progress comes at costs at times, no doubt, in the short term. And there are some things to work through there. But like you said, this gives them some opportunity and some time to put all that together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us here today to give your perspective on it. Very helpful to visit with those who are have a front row seat out there to see what's happening there. And it'll be very interesting to see how it all comes together. So we appreciate you giving us a few minutes today.
Well, I'm happy to do it, and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks very much, Jeff. You take care.
All right.
That's Jeff Simon, Executive Director of the Western Dakota Energy Association. Yeah, you know, there is that, right? We're talking about it here with the dairy farms coming in, and well, I don't know, there's things that come along for the ride, and those things are not always handy for the people that are close to those facilities. And there's one sort of facility, but there could be a second one as well as part of the plan. So certainly some good things for energy and good things for the economy in the state of North Dakota, but sometimes those things come with some complications as well. It's 4:50 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. After this, foreclosures are on the rise in Minnesota. How bad has it gotten in the last year? We'll talk about that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. So the Minnesota Attorney General's office issued a warning not too long ago about an uptick in complaints from homeowners that promised relief only to discover that it was all a sham. So there's some scammers out there targeting people who are behind on their mortgage payments. Mortgage assistance scammers, they're called. I guess there's a scam for just about everything here. Mortgage foreclosures, the Star Tribune article says, are somewhat rare and can vary dramatically from month to month, but there are signs that more Minnesota homeowners are struggling to keep up with their payments. A company that tracks mortgage data across the country said from September to October, so just in 1 month, the foreclosure rate in Minnesota increased 18.5%. So that's not a good direction there. With one foreclosure per 6,700 housing units during the month, Minnesota had the 27th highest foreclosure rate of the 50 states in the country. And nationwide, during the month, there was also a slight uptick in foreclosure activity, a 4% increase from the previous month. But in Minnesota, it got really bad. They don't really get into details about how bad that was, but the story goes on to say that the Intercontinental Exchange, a real estate tech and data company, reported the rate of delinquency, so loan payments that are 30 days or more late but not yet in foreclosure, is up about 6% year over year and went up slightly from September to October. And this was the fourth consecutive month of annual increases in mortgage delinquencies. Serious delinquencies, more than 90 days past due, increased nearly 6% to a 16-month high. So put it all together, and is in my mind, this is a continuation of what we've been seeing in the credit card numbers, right? I mean, we talk about that quite a bit. We just had a story about that earlier. And defaulting on a credit card is one thing. Defaulting on your home where you might lose your house, that's no bueno. And you don't want to mess around with that. With house prices going up and again, it's a stretch of inflation, right? The harder it is to get by, the more things you're going to say, I just can't afford being able to do this. So watch out for the scammers because people, I don't know, are somehow able to get information about those who might be struggling to make ends meet, and you don't want to make a bad situation worse. So beware on that. And if you get some kind of a notice, they say you should contact your mortgage company directly to find out what their direct message is to you, not what someone calls you out of the blue and says, hey, your mortgage company told us to call you. So on their behalf, on behalf of them, we're calling you because it might not be absolutely true. All right, coming up in hour number two of the program, we got the top five at five. Joe Biden also wants to give away more money on his way out the door. Kevin Cramer is not a big fan of that, so we're going to hear from him. And Paul Fisher, headmaster of Capstone Classical Academy. They're getting ready to move into the new building. All that and more on the way in hour number two. Here we go, hour number two, the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is the final hour of the program for this week, so you're heading home with Hallstrom on a Friday afternoon. I don't know. It still feels like a Tuesday to me. It seems like we had a couple days off and got back in yesterday, and here we are again today. But it's not Tuesday. It's a Friday. So we'll take it, right? A Friday is never a bad thing. Good to have you with me for the program here today. Coming to you live from the Steve Hallstrom Studio, built on a solid foundation. Thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ram Jack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it. Go to pccnd.com to learn more. All right, here's my question for this hour. Who you got? Vikings, Packers? I am fascinated by this game. This should be a really, really good football game. There's so much at stake for the Vikings. The Packers, I suppose if all goes well, they could maybe sneak up a spot or two on the playoff rung, but I think they're kind of where they're going to be. The Vikings, though, if they win this weekend, next week, which seems kind of crazy, but the thought of them winning whatever they've had eight in a row seemed crazy 8 weeks ago, too. Who knows what might happen? So who you got, Vikings, Packers? Give me a score on this one, 271-1100. Have you been hearing this conversation about, like, the United States should merge with Canada and create one country? Addison, have you heard any of this?
I've been hearing all sorts of funny, random things on like, well, we should do this or we should do this. But the Canada one seems oddly popular.
Yes, I agree. And like this is there's no way this could happen. These are two completely separate countries. You can't merge countries. It just doesn't work. But Kevin O'Leary was on a bunch of talk shows here this week talking about like 50% of Canadians would do it, I think is what they said. The survey is like a lot of Canadians would do it. That's scary. That means you don't love your or love the direction of your country, I guess. So I don't know. I think this is all seems very silly to me, but I don't know. Maybe it's more popular than I think that it is. So if you want to do something popular, go over to Wimmer's Diamonds because they've got the bling over there. More than 100 years of breathtaking moments. They are one of the most enduring businesses in our community. And when it comes to jewelers, they've been doing it for more than 100 years. They're kind of the OG when it comes to jewelry stores. The Wimmer's family has spent more than a century learning the lives and love stories of thousands of people in Fargo-Moorhead and beyond. It's a four-generation family business. They build the whole tradition, though, on affordable quality, where trust is valued and the connection they make with the customers lasts a lifetime. Stop over there. You'll see what I'm talking about. Wimmer's Diamonds is the business. They're at 4582 32nd Avenue South in Fargo, just west of the tavern there on 32nd. Online, you can find out more about them as well at wimmersdiamonds.com. That's wimmersdiamonds.com. Before the show is done, I'll give you my prediction on Vikings Packers. This one's going to be, I think, a really good game. I can't see either team blowing the other one out. I just can't see that happening. And every time you think the Vikings are going to find a way to lose it, they have found ways to win it. So we'll see. This will be a really good test. This Packers team is playing very good right now. So we'll see what happens. All right, it's time for the top five at five. And this is what I call the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. It's brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. These are stories that pass the so what test for me. This came out just a couple hours ago. I'm surprised I haven't seen more about this or heard more about this on some of the top of the hour newscasts and websites. But the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development said today that there was a record 18% rise in homelessness in the United States in the last year. 18%! That is a monster jump, driven by factors like unaffordable housing, high inflation, systemic racism, natural disasters, and rising immigration. So this is Biden's housing and urban development. So you're going to get the whole systemic racism. I don't know how that has much to do with anything. If you make your payment, your landlord's going to keep you in the house, I'm just saying, or the apartment there. A total of 771,480 people experience homelessness in an emergency shelter, safe haven, transitional housing program, or in unsheltered locations, basically sleeping outside. So this isn't the kind of homelessness you hear about once in a while where, you know, I don't have a house, I'm just going to kind of sleep at my, I'm kind of going to bum around at my parents and my brother's place and my sister-in-law and whatever. This is people that are in emergency shelters or housing programs or just sleeping outside. That's about 23 out of every 10,000 people in the U.S., so almost a million people. And overall, the number of people experiencing homelessness increased by 18%. That's how we get to the 18% there. Last year, there was a 12% rise in homelessness, and now this year is 18%. So when you take a look at the pace of increase, that's a 50% higher jump, 23 to 24, than 22 to 23. So very interesting notes about this here. And look, I don't know why they put in systemic racism. I don't know what that has to do with anything. And I don't know why what they say about unaffordable housing. I think they're just talking about maybe rent went up, but their income didn't. High inflation, yes, I get all of that. Rising immigration, yes, get all of that too. This is all a part of that. So I thought that story was very interesting. Story number two is when we talked about a little bit off the top of the show, a Cass County judge has ruled that Michael Youssa is not guilty of attempted murder and other 11 charges due to a lack of mental capacity. They say he could not process the ramifications of his actions. He ran over a motorcyclist, fired more than 30 shots from his balcony on the apartment, exchanged gunfire with law enforcement. He's probably lucky to be alive. This was back in July of 2022. He's been committed to the state hospital, and they're going to determine in February how long he will be there. Well, he needs to be there for the rest of his life. I don't know that someone of this level can be rehabilitated. Sure, something miraculous, I guess. I shouldn't say it's not possible, but we need to be talking seriously about let's make the young man care as comfortable as we can, give him as good a life as he can possibly have. But when you do these kinds of things, it's going to be a long road back. My best wishes to him for sure. Story number three, this coming from Reuters, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, said earlier today that its analysis of samples from the first severe case of bird flu in the country have showed mutations not seen in samples of the backyard flock on the patient's property. So this means we have mutations. Whatever was on the property is not what the guy had. The CDC said the mutations were in the hemagglutinin gene. Don't ask me to say that again or spell it. But that's the part of the virus that plays a key role in it attaching to host cells. The health body says the risk to the general public from the outbreak has not changed or remains low. But that makes it tricky when you have these viruses mutating, the bird flu virus there. So no, thank you. I don't want any part of that. TheStreet.com, which is a website that I like to frequent every once in a while, is quoting somebody who is in the cryptocurrency world. And this analyst at Bitfinex says that our minimum price target for Bitcoin in mid-2025 is $140,000, and we see significant potential for upside to $200,000. Now, friend, listen to me now. This is not like 10 years down the line. They are projecting that because of the Trump administration, plus with halving of Bitcoin, which I don't understand any of this, but it's a part of how the whole thing goes. But historical data, they say, suggests we are mid-cycle following the April 2024 halving, and the market will likely peak around the third quarter of 2025. And post-halving years have seen the strongest rally. So these people say it's at a 90, what do we say, 94,000 a day? They're saying minimum 140, possibility of upside of 200,000. I don't know. I still don't own any. I don't know what it's going to take for me to get off the fence. I don't know. And finally, a story that I mentioned earlier in the program as well, but this is something that we can't just like roll our eyes at this story and just say, well, you know, things happen. Star Tribune reports that a ninth U.S. telecom firm has been confirmed to have been hacked as part of a Chinese espionage campaign. This effort gave officials in Beijing, yes, I said officials in Beijing, access to private texts and phone conversations of an unknown number of Americans. This from a top White House official. I get it. Playing hardball with China is difficult, but if somebody doesn't call them on this stuff, well, pretty soon they're going to fly a spy balloon over our country. And that, friends, is the Top 5 at 5, brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty, the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. It's 5:17. When we return on this Friday edition of the Steve Hallstrom Show, we have a lot left to do, including hear from our good senator, Kevin Cramer. He was on with David Asman today on the Larry Kudlow program on Fox Business. Joe Biden wants to give away more of your money on his way out the door. Wait till you hear what the newest trick is and the commentary from the senator. That's next. Attention Lakes Region residents. If you are tired of rusty, foul-smelling water, Lindsay Echo Water's got the solution. They specialize in rust, odor, and arsenic removal, and their local team understands your unique challenges. They've seen just about everything in the water world. With more than 50 years of trusted service, the team at Lindsay EcoWater provides expert water testing and professional care for all makes and models. Say goodbye to water problems. Get a hold of Lindsay EcoWater today. Lindsay EcoWater, your local water treatment experts. Better water starts at home. All right, I've got about a six-minute clip here from Kevin Cramer on with David Asman today on Larry Kudlow's Fox Business show. And the IRS commissioner, Dan Werfel, said in a statement last week, "We realized, looking at our internal data, that about a million taxpayers overlooked claiming a credit when they were actually eligible." He says it was a complex credit. "So to minimize headaches and get this money to the taxpayers, we're making these payments automatic, meaning these people will not be required to go through the process of filing an amended return to receive it." So the dumbing down of America continues. And the conversation went a little bit like this, as Asman was talking with Senator Kevin Cramer from North Dakota about this today. Let's see what we've got to do here. Let's
money to eligible taxpayers. We're making these payments automatic, meaning these people will not be required to go through the extensive process of filing an amended return to receive it. So bottom line is they're just throwing money out the window.
Yeah, I guess they didn't get the whole inflation is a bad thing
right.
Memo, David, and we're responsible for it. They seem to have missed that one as well. It's really quite ludicrous to think that 1 million people who didn't ask for the money, didn't apply for it when it was, you know, supposedly available in 2021 tax returns, that now somehow they're just going to force it on them. And who knows for sure if it's even true? Who knows? But by true,
right.
I mean, who knows if they're even eligible,
yeah,
or if they're really supposed to be getting it, or if this is just some sort of last-minute stunt to drive up inflation as Donald Trump comes in to the White House. I don't know, but it's one of the crazier things. And just imagine, this is with 87,000 new IRS employees that the first fuel on the fire of inflation in the American Rescue Plan created, so they could go after more taxpayers. I mean, it's why we're where we are, and it's why Donald Trump's going to be president soon.
And by the way, those tens of thousands of extra IRS workers, you know, they're not just going to be going over a small number of millionaires and billionaires. They're
Correct.
Going for the middle class. They're going for the small businesses, the pass-through businesses. They're the ones that are going to get hit the hardest and have to, even if they're completely innocent, they'll have to take months off of their
right.
business schedule to fill all these forms. And concerning COVID, I don't want to leave COVID completely, because does
sure.
anybody even know how much money is left in some of those COVID funds?
Well, and
question.
I think that's part of what's at stake, David, is I don't know how much there is. I don't think anybody knows exactly how much there is, but a lot of what is left is what they're trying to get rid of quickly, so that it doesn't become, a pay for some tax cuts, or pay for some regulatory, cuts in various agencies. There are just all kinds of ways, better ways to utilize any leftover COVID money than just to simply give it to people, and drive up inflation. So, no, I don't know, but I would hope that's one of the things that the DOGE committee gets after, and that Congress itself gets after.
Now, remember that this is $2.4 billion worth of these stimulus checks. And like we had in North Dakota, we had this primary residence credit, right? But you had to be an adult and you had to apply for it. If you did what you needed to do, you would get your money. They didn't just say, we're just going to give it to everybody. No, you've got to do your part, because you're an adult and you should have to do your part. What we have here is, we don't know who these people, we don't know if they've got it coming to them. Just, well, we think these people have it, so we're just going to send it out. $2.4 billion on the way out the
and
door.
And then we have this horribly named Inflation Reduction Act, which was essentially, at least
yes.
Biden admitted, it was essentially a Green Energy Act. That's what it amounted to.
Yes.
Billions, billions and billions, just peppered with all of these subsidies, tens, even hundreds of billions of dollars in these various subsidies. I think even as much as they'd love to spend money before they leave, even the Biden administration can't spend all that money. Should we claw
That's
all
right.
that money back?
I believe that we should claw a lot of it back, and what we ought to do is repurpose some of those dollars.
Yes.
Some of it's not necessary at all. Some of it might be better utilized in somewhere else. There are a lot
like
of the building Green
New
a Deal
wall, like building
make,
more of a border
there
wall.
There you have it. There you have it. Let's do that. And by the way, that would cost much less than putting up a whole bunch of electric vehicle charging stations where nobody drives electrical vehicles, or turning our entire energy grid over to China's supply chain or whatever the case might be. There's a whole lot we can be doing, and I can't wait to get started on it.
Now, we mentioned already in the show the DOGE recommendations that are coming up. We're already seeing some of them drip out, but how is that going to be picked up by Congress? How will that be put into action?
Yeah, it's a great question, because DOGE doesn't have authority, but what they do have is influence. Yes. And so like you said, they're already dripping some things out. These are big things. I actually think it adds value to the work of the appropriators and the budgeters and the Congress by providing both political cover and, by the way, some political exposure to a lot of the waste. I love one of the first ideas that I read about, of course, is the simplification of the tax code. And therein lies one of our first opportunities with the new Congress through budget reconciliation. The simplification of the tax code could be the greatest gift to the economy and to every taxpayer in this country, and certainly to business.
By the way, that's, Steve Forbes' idea. Get rid of all deductions for everybody. Just have a simple flat tax. You think Congress is ready for something that revolutionary?
Well, I don't think that they are. I love the idea of a flat tax, but a flatter tax would even be better, because right now we have these seven brackets. I think when the House passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, when I was in the House in 2017, we were down to three brackets. The Senate brought it back up to seven brackets. And there are ramifications to the transition and all of those things, David. But there's no question. Simpler is better. It costs a lot less. It unleashes economic opportunity. The tax code itself is one of the worst regulations on every taxpayer in the country.
Great point there. When you talk about regulations, how about the tax code? We don't talk about that as a regulation, but 100% it makes it more complicated. Doesn't sound like the senator, by the way, is completely on board with the flat tax idea. I think he sounded like seven brackets is too much. Maybe we make it three, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like he is willing to take a jump that far first go around.
Unless, of course, you're a CPA or a tax lawyer, it's pretty good for your economy.
But you can't wait on these things, Senator Cramer. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
You have to. The tax extensions have to be at the front of the line, or at least side by side some of the border policies that we need. No?
It's an interesting point. What I worry a little bit about, David, is particularly given what we've been through the last few weeks, just trying to get the government funded for a few more months, you see how complex this big machine is. And when you start dealing with something as big as the tax code, it's going to take a little while. We know that. But at the same time, the border crisis is an immediate crisis. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act don't expire till the end of the year. What I worry about is
the end of the year isn't far off.
I know,
and also, Americans voted for something. It is a complex deal. I understand putting together a tax plan is a very complex deal, but you have a president who wants it, and you have a president who now has more power than he did after he won the election. 51% approval rating,
for sure,
according to Gallup,
sure,
we heard today. So
more
Americans want him to do changes now, and because they want money in their pocket. You can't wait that long on these tax extensions.
He's pressing the senator here.
Well, the money in their pocket won't change until next year anyway, but that having said that, just remember, Congress operates, they do, you're right, and there's no question it creates momentum, and that's true, and we ought to be working on it as we are right now through the end of the year if that's what it takes. But Congress generally operates best on deadlines, not starting points. So if we start on January 4th or July 4th or August 4th, it seems like we always end up at the end of September.
Yeah.
Having said all of that, there are a lot of things to do, whether we do them all at once or do them in tranches. I'm for all of it. We need to go big. But remember, if we get to simplifying, if we put Steve Moore in charge of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act extensions and he came up with a flat tax, shouldn't take very long.
Well, there's only one person who needs to be in charge, and we know who that is. It's Donald Trump.
That's
the man who can kick the entire Congress, both the House and the Senate, in the rear end and get them moving.
Yep, and that needs to happen. I thought that he pushed the senator at the end there a little bit about, hey, Let's get some action on this. So I thought that was a good conversation. Thought you would appreciate that. All right, 5:32, we got a weather and news check coming up right now. And then when we come back, they're getting ready to move on in to the new digs in South Fargo at Capstone Classical Academy. Paul Fisher is the headmaster there, and he visits with us coming up next. Hey, whether you are looking for a holiday party location, a corporate gathering, maybe a big wedding event, groom dinner, watch party, or more, CJ's Tavern promises a welcoming atmosphere, lots of space for big or small gatherings, scenic views, and a recently expanded mouth-watering menu. CJ's Tavern is located at the gorgeous Rose Creek Golf Course in South Fargo. And if you're thinking about putting together a party, they would love to get a chance to quote you on that one. Just email them info@cjsfargo.com, cjsfargo.com. Find out some updates as well from them on their Facebook page. They've got a whole lot of good food, a whole lot of good locations, and a lot of smiles from the people there that will greet you and take good care of you. That is CJ's Tavern at the gorgeous Rose Creek Golf Course, South Fargo. 5:36, Steve Hallstrom Show. Well, the Christmas presents aren't done coming for some of the students and teachers and staff in the area at Capstone Classical Academy. They're getting ready to move into their brand new facility. I drive by it quite often. It looks absolutely fantastic. They've been hard at work for a long time. They're getting ready to move in. Paul Fisher is the headmaster at Capstone Classical Academy. He joins us here right now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Paul, good afternoon. Happy holidays to you.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you, Steve. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, great to visit with you. Well, you're just a few days away now from the big move-in party. How are things looking down there?
Well, better and better every day. It's a busy Christmas break. Lots of cleanup to do after a big construction project, but teachers are moved in. If you popped your head in, you'd look like they were having class tomorrow. So things are coming along really well.
That's great. When is the first day of classes now? When will the kiddos show up?
January 8th. We'll get the teachers in on the 6th and 7th for training on new protocols, new facility, you know, lots to learn there. And then we'll have we call it Golden Griffin Homecoming on Tuesday evening before school starts on the 8th. We'll have all the families in for the first time to get oriented.
Well, tell us about the building. Tell us about the facility. It looks fantastic. It's got a wide footprint down there on the south part of town. Tell us about the building and what it's going to do for you.
Sure. Yeah, we're sitting here on 18 acres, you know, down at 43rd and 64th Avenue South. And really, I mean, it's classical architecture. So when you drive up to it, you'll notice the columns in the front. You'll notice that it looks like a traditional academic building. And then on the inside, you know, the key features are big, bright, beautiful windows, lots of natural light, the chapel, the library. Some of our features are just will not be complete when we move in because there's such beautiful craftsmanship in them. The woodwork and the marble and all of the, you know, stonework going on in the chapel and the library. So those spaces will be opened, as you mentioned, Christmas presents. Those will wait till later this winter or early spring even before those are complete. But we've got 92,000 square feet of classroom space that will accommodate pre-K through 12th grade. And so we're all set. We've got future phases to, you know, add a performing arts venue and another gymnasium and a refectory. But for now, we've really got everything we need for a K-12 program.
Part of your emphasis and part of the DNA of Capstone Classical is tradition, a legacy, heritage. I hate to say old-fashioned, but things that are time-honored. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. At the same time, our kids need to learn in progressive ways, and that means some technology. How have you balanced those two concepts?
Well, Steve, you know, technology is important when it's important. And so there are times where technology is what you need for collaboration, for some creative work, for, you know, certainly applying logic and programming. So many ways that what you do in a classical education have to find their practical expression and be given a place to publish and collaborate through tech. But, you know, a K-12 program is not primarily about technology or shouldn't be. You know, it's primarily about forming young minds and hearts in wisdom and virtue and creating somebody who can think and learn for a lifetime. And that's what we're focused on. We are low tech for the most part, but we use tech where it's necessary. And, you know, there's places where technology really diminishes in education. The one-to-one programs in schools have been largely a disaster. So we've avoided that kind of approach to technology. The greatest technology in the school is the book, you know, and there's lots of great books. Our library actually was funded, fully funded by donors for $500,000 in new books on the shelves. So they won't be there when we open because the library won't be finished, but we'll have about 7,000 volumes and fill it up to about 11,000 in the years to come. So really blessed to be focused on that kind of technology first.
Yeah, great. I appreciate that answer, and I think more technology is not always better, I think, in sort of any part of society. So I know it's something that you all have thought about quite a bit. But like you said, there's some areas where it allows you to do your education better. So it'll be interesting to see how that all meshes together. Give us sort of a reminder, if you will, on where you're at right now as far as students and what grade levels that you have currently here in this school year.
Yep. Well, we offer through pre-K through eighth grade right now with a ninth grade hybrid group that's taking some of our eighth grade and some ninth grade classes. We'll have kind of a hybrid ninth, 10th grade next year, but all the way through a traditional eighth grade program this year, ninth grade program next year. And so we're planning to graduate our first seniors in the, I guess it'll be the 27-28 school year, our first full class in the 28-29 school year. We've got about, through the eighth grade program, we've got this year 228 students as of today, and probably looking at about 300 students in the fall of 25.
Tell me about some of your favorite places within the new building. What are some of the favorite spots as you have grown used to the new footprint there that are really enjoyable for you and the staff to see how it's all come together?
Well, you know, there's one place that's probably my favorite. If you walk in through the main front doors on the lintel, the limestone lintel above the front doors, there's the Latin phrase, Ego Veni, Ut Vitam Abeant, which means I've come that they may have life, from John 10:10. And that idea of bringing students through these front doors to be shepherded ultimately by the Good Shepherd into abundant life is important. But as you walk above you, there are also Aquinas and Aristotle in stone relief, reminding us of faith and reason being at the foundation, primarily through the Logos, which is Christ, who is represented by a 10-foot-tall gold cross that is not yet placed on the top of the building but will be later this winter or early spring. There's an architectural lantern that's not there yet. And so the building is actually topless. It's missing its final piece and the focal point, which will be there when we do the dedication later in 2025. But just inside of those front doors is Founders Hall, which has 12 sculptures, busts that we had commissioned to be made just for Capstone that have great thinkers and theologians and politicians and poets and playwrights, philosophers surrounding our golden griffin in Italian marble on the floor with our seven griffin's weapons or the school's seven virtues etched around him. And then around that room, painted in gold on a frieze, around the perimeter is Ephesians 2, 19 through 22, which talks about our students being built together. Really, the context is the church, but into a dwelling place for God by his Spirit, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets with Christ as the cornerstone. So it's this reminder as you walk into the building. You mentioned legacy and heritage and tradition. It's a great reminder to students what's been given to them and whose shoulders upon which they stand. And that moves you directly then or welcomes you into the library, which is the first large room as you come into Founders Hall there and then into the rest of the school. So, and above that is the chapel, which is really the jewel of the building. Mm. And so that center pavilion of the school is so mission focused and so central, and it will be the geographic center of the campus when it's all completed. It is quite symbolic, but it's also certainly functional and will teach students on a daily.
Yeah, sure. Tell me a little bit about how this all has come together as far as the energy level? How has it energized your community to be able to have everybody under one roof? Just efficiency is, I'm sure, something you're looking forward to. Yeah. But just the thought of having everybody together, what kind of energy level has that created for your program there?
Well, it allows us to become what we've envisioned and what really a classical school should be, which is an entire K-12 community with all of the faculty sharpening and encouraging one another in one place, in common spaces, and all of the families gathering together, parents and teachers being able to have access to their entire community. It's largely relational, Steve. It's the ability to be in one place together, to sharpen and encourage one another. And education's done best in vibrant community, and the building just brings us together, and that's what most people are excited about. Of course, everybody loves new things, but ultimately it's our community that gets fostered in this place that will matter the most. So it's really quite the moment coming up, and then, you know, it gets to kind of go on throughout the semester as we have multiple ceremonies and new completions of different spaces as we go.
Yeah, I think it's fun to think about. Certainly, you know, you have your sort of your first day when everybody comes, and it'd be great to have everything ready and done, but not all that realistic in the world that we live in. It's just not everything's going to come together as quickly as you'd like. But in my mind, it's kind of fun because, yes, you get your sort of grand opening, but then you get all these other little things that are going to come along in due time, and you get multiple grand openings, I guess.
That's right. Well, delayed gratification. We love teaching the students the value of delayed gratification. So we're all going to practice that by example this semester.
Yeah, it's just amazing to me when I think about the idea. And I remember visiting with a good friend, Larry and June Nygaard, two good friends who were the first ones that kind of mentioned this to me. That were, you know, some of the founding partners that made this happen, and talking about this idea. And from that point to now, to see how it has all happened, and certainly there's been time to put everything together, but really when you look at it, it's come together remarkably quickly to be able to now have a facility like this. It's an amazing story, and I know that you're kind of, you know, within the trees all the time, but I wonder, are you able to step back and just kind of reflect on what's happened and how the good Lord has blessed this organization as you move forward?
Yeah, so frequently, and of late, it's a little surreal.
Yeah, I bet.
The brick and mortar kind of make it feel permanent and real in a way that flesh and bone sometimes doesn't. It's just seeing it being in the building with other folks, and, you know, that this was just a field, you know, 3 years ago. There wasn't even a road here. There was a dirt path, if you will.
Yeah.
And so it's profound to me, the generosity of Fargo, the way that we believe God has appointed the people who had the vision for this school, and the parents who had the courage to step out and join us when there was no building, no faculty, you know, in the winter 21-22, where folks were gathering around an idea that now is really mobilized.
Yes.
Into what we believe is going to just be a key attribute of our community, and we hope will be a blessing to those who aren't even enrolled in the school. And we're excited about what's next. But Fargo's a national story in so many ways, and this school is attracting attention nationally because they're wondering how this happens. And I always say, well, the answer is Fargo and faith.
Yeah.
And Fargo's not every town. And so we've been blessed by what God has done in his people here.
No question about it. When all is done and when you've got all the finishing touches there, what will be the total cost of construction for the facility?
Yeah, the facility is about $38 million, you know, in the land on top of that. And the campaign that we've had to launch the school has included a lot of operational support, too. So all told, to get to this point has cost us about $55 million. And then, you know, we've got to get busy funding scholarships, continuing to grow accessibility. So any family who would like to be here can find a way to do so.
Wonderful. And square.
That's sorry. Important.
Yeah, square footage altogether.
Really important to it.
Yeah, when the footprint is done, what kind of square footage will the building have?
Well, right now we're at 92,000 actively used square feet. And then we've got, you know, three more buildings in the next two phases. So I don't know the square footage of those, but if you can imagine, you know, an auditorium that seats 600 or 700 people, and then another varsity gym and an event center with a dining hall. So by the time you add all of those, I'd imagine we're going to come close to doubling that square footage.
Fantastic. Well, it's been fun to watch it all come together, and can't wait to get a chance to take a walk through and see what the good Lord has done and what you all have done in kind of helping all that come to reality. So I appreciate you taking a few minutes here, Paul, to walk through it with me. All the best to you. Happy New Year, and many blessings as you get ready to have the kiddos come in for day one.
Well, you too, Steve. Happy New Year. Come by for a tour sometime. I'll be glad to host you.
That'd be a blast. We'd love it. Thanks so much, Paul. You take care. That's Paul Fisher, headmaster at Capstone Classical Academy. What a crazy story, and how fast all that's come together. All right, 551, Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, Vikings-Packers, how's it going to go? I'll give you one man's guess coming up next. Well, the Minnesota Vikings take on the Green Bay Packers in one of the NFL's fiercest rivalries, and there is a lot on the line on Sunday. The game's been moved to 3:25 because of the excitement surrounding the game. If you want to buy a ticket, they've been sold out for a long time. You're going to likely pay $300-$400 for even the cheapest seats there, and it should be an absolutely charged environment there, no doubt about that one. For the Vikings, the key here is to try to slow up the fantastic running back for Green Bay, Josh Jacobs. He has been an absolute bruiser. He's about 6 foot, 220 pounds. He's a tough guy to bring down, so tackling is going to be really important. If they can do that, they'll have a chance to, have a shot at winning the game. If they let him run wild, it's going to be really tough because they'll be keeping the Vikings offense off the field. Get 4 or 5 yards a carry, and it's going to be a long day for your defense. The Vikings did have some success early this year against their quarterback, Jordan Love, who they got three interceptions off of in the first game at Lambeau. The Vikings built a really quick 28-0 lead in that game, and it was kind of over before it started earlier this year. Since then, the Packers they've gotten red hot, and the Vikings have been just as good as well. The Vikings are very healthy for this game. Only one of their key players is dinged up. Now, they did lose one of their better offensive linemen for the season, but of players that are not on injured reserve, they are very healthy. They might be missing one linebacker. The Packers are missing a few guys, but they're not doing too bad either. So this should be a good one. How do the Vikings win this game? I think, again, they have to slow up the Green Bay offense, run the ball a little bit. I think they're going to be able to move the ball on the Packers. Their offensive line will have to be really good, too. The offensive line got pushed around last week, and the line they're playing, the defensive front for Green Bay, is better. So they're going to have to be able to figure it out. They got to keep Sam Darnold protected so that he can find those Vikings receivers. This one is a flip-a-coin game to me. It really is. The Vikings being at home maybe makes enough of a difference. I saw earlier today that maybe 25% of the crowd might be Green Bay fans, but that's about what it normally is there as well. I'll go Vikings 27-26. I think it'll be a relatively high-scoring game, but two good defenses, so I don't think it'll be a crazy track meet either. Should be a lot of fun. All right, my friend, well, that'll do it for the program here today. Thanks for being with me on the show. I will be back here Monday and Tuesday next week, and then Wednesday, New Year's Day, we will be off. But we'll have a pretty full week next week, and can't wait to be back and talk about the crazy world as it develops each day. And we'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great night, great weekend, and keep on flying that flag.